Good morning. This is Fran Michel for the Old Mole Variety Hour, and I'm here with Desiree Hellegers, who, when she's not digging on behalf of KBOO's listeners, is also Associate Professor of English at Washington State University, Vancouver, and co-founder of the Collective for Social and Environmental Justice. And she's also most recently been working with developing and promoting an alternative plan for the budget of Washington State University just across the river from Portland in Vancouver. So, Desiree, could you give us a sense of what's going on? What's been the budget proposal from the president of the university, and what are the ramifications there, and what is the alternative?
Okay, so I just want to be clear at the outset that our budget in Vancouver, right, so we're right across the river in Salmon Creek, our budget is, you know, slightly distinct from the Pullman budget, but nonetheless, we're impacted by the proposed cuts and really concerned about the fate of workers on the Pullman campus and the fate of instruction, the fate of student services. So basically, we got word several weeks ago that there would be major cuts to the tune of $30 million over a three-year period, so about $10 million a year over each of 3 years. And the proposal that the president of the university brought forward involved a 2.5% cut to every academic department, eliminating two positions in the Multicultural Student Services Program, Student Services Center, eliminating WSU's entire performance art program, including all course offerings, theater productions, and the entire faculty, and substantial cuts to the stipends of graduate teaching assistants in engineering and architecture. So it's up to about almost a 20% cut in their graduate TA stipends.
And this is coming on top of, for instance, previous rounds of cuts to academic departments and on already low stipends for graduate and research assistants and associates. I mean, they're not making big bucks. We're talking about possibly going on public assistance if their living funds are cut even further.
Yeah, I think they were barely breaking $20,000. And they're making a little bit more than other TAs in the WSU system, but substantially less, we find, than administrators are making, for sure. And I will say, too, that I was really concerned about the cuts to the Multicultural Student Services because, you know, we just had a very nationally visible incident in which the president of the College Republicans from Washington State University was one of the people involved in the Charlottesville white supremacist incident rally, you know, torch waving and all the rest of it. And so you can make these kind of boilerplate assertions of, as a university, we stand for diversity and all the rest of it. But, you know, when your first impulse is to cut positions with the Multicultural Student Services, let's just say that's sending an incredibly conflicted message. And also, I think our concern was that the performance arts program was working pretty extensively with students of color in the high schools in the Pullman area, you know, first-generation students. So they were creating these important connections between the university and the community and creating stage plays that represent those students' experiences. And so the fact that they would be on the cutting block was extremely disturbing. And we've seen like substantial cuts to theater in the past, and this is really the last vestiges of the theater program. And I think if we were talking about censoring theater and saying we're going to eliminate the theater program to censor the politics of the theater, we might understand the gravity of this situation. But the effect is absolutely the same. And the idea of eliminating the performing arts at a land-grant college is just completely unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, this is really cutting into the idea that part of higher education is to contribute to the general public welfare. And that's particularly true, of course, at land-grant institutions, which are founded in the 19th century on that basis as a way to improve the lives of people living in the vicinity of those universities.
Yeah, I mean, some of the courses of theater program are being taught through the music department, and the music department goes back to 1901. I mean, what's going to be cut next? Why are these programs deemed so completely disposable?
Yeah, well, one way of thinking about that might be in terms of the trend in higher education toward funding STEM, funding things that are patentable. Ever since the 1980 Bayh-Dole Act made it legal for universities to patent and profit from and sell off results of publicly financed research, there's been a kind of financial incentive for universities to go into investing in things that can be sold for a lot of money, unlike things related to the arts and humanities, which tend to be more labor intensive and less commodifiable in the same kinds of ways that are, for instance, new jeans, new styles of Apple, things like that.
and they're certainly more likely to provide a kind of foundation for ethical consideration of the impacts of those technologies and the environmental impacts of those technologies, the cultural impacts, the ways in which they might exacerbate existing inequality.
So the university has decided it needs to cut this deficit. Now, of course, also public universities have had public funding cut dramatically in recent years. So there's less money coming in from the tax base. And then there's been historically a shift in the way that that money is being spent at universities. There's less coming in from taxes. More of it's coming in necessarily than from students themselves and from their student loans.
And substantially less of it is going to instruction and more of it is going to administrative bloat. I mean, there's been so much written about this over the last decade. And I will say that, I mean, I was certainly familiar with the concept of administrative bloat. What I wasn't, and the other people who worked on this proposal with me, I don't think any of us were actually prepared for the data that we encountered when we actually went to the public database of Washington State employees and ran a search of WSU employees making $200,000 or more. And what we discovered is that there were more than 70 administrators in the WSU system making $200,000 or more. And that's a pretty conservative estimate that's only based on those people in the system who are explicitly identified as having administrative roles. We know that there are many more that are not explicitly listed. And that is in comparison, for example, to Governor Jay Inslee, who makes in the neighborhood of about 172,000. So you've got more than 70 administrators at WSU making substantially more than the governor.
So your proposal then takes advantage of that fact, because that seems to be a place where there's some extra room in the budget. And the proposal, as I understand it, involves cutting 30% from the salaries of those making $300,000 a year or more, 20% from those making between $200,000 and $299,000, and 10% from the salaries of those administrators making between $100,000 and $200,000 a year.
That's correct.
So in developing this proposal, the finding the information is the sort of thing that students should be able to do, that anyone should be able to do, to dig up the information about where your tax dollars are going.
Yeah. Personally, I'd love to see every public university in the country, and maybe every university, have a day or two teach-in a year where the students get together, you know, with guidance from professors and work through the data on where their tuition money is going, where their tax dollars are going. And I think that sometimes it's hard to get folks to invest in understanding the state budget or understanding the federal budget. Well, if we started with university budgets and we made that part of the university curriculum and part of what we do, then I think that they would develop a much deeper investment in how budgets operate across the board, from their own domestic budgets to the federal budget.
That's a brilliant idea, and I can see exactly why, for instance, the current national administration would not want people doing that. Given the kind of tax proposal that is currently on the table, they probably don't want people looking too closely at that. So how does that work out in terms of getting you to that $30 million over 3 years? And like, why hasn't anybody thought of this before?
That is a very good question. I mean, I think usually the proposals come from the top down, and the first thing that they want to cut back is the salaries of some of the lowest paid workers in the universities. They want to cut those positions altogether. And in this case, they were going to cut the entire faculty in the performance arts. And we did get wind recently also that there did seem to be some other targeted cuts of some of the environmental programs. So yeah, I mean, this is basically envisioning kind of the people's budget and what would the budget look like from another perspective. And we estimate that easily close to $5 million could be saved just by cutting the salaries of the 70 administrators making over $200,000 a year.
Wow, so that's like half of what would need to be cut.
Yes, and again, that's a pretty conservative estimate, and it also doesn't include the cuts to people making between $100,000 and $200,000 a year.
So that would really go a long way in saving the money that the president of the university claims needs to be saved. I mean, if we think about budgets as moral documents and as reflecting in a larger sense social values, the values that Washington State is proposing to endorse through the university president's budget and through this alternative proposal seem quite different. How did you go about figuring this out and coming up with this proposal and promoting it and getting people to understand what's involved? There's a petition, I understand.
Yeah, there is a petition that's now been signed by more than 400 people. We began by garnering faculty signatures, so we got about 40 faculty to sign on before we issued some press releases and issued the petition to the public. So basically, we've had stories now in the Spokesman Review, the Pullman Moscow paper, the Lewiston, Idaho paper, and this has been over break, so we do expect a kind of another wave of media after the holidays over.
But there are presumably folks who would like to sign on to this, but may be not feeling secure enough in their positions with the university to take a public stance of that sort.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely hearing from other faculty and staff, and even students who definitely agree with this proposal and have indicated that their concerns about retaliation are basically constraining them.
And how did you go about organizing this? I mean, were there 40 faculty in on this conversation from the beginning, or are you unionized? Do you have a professional organization at that campus? How did this happen?
Yeah, I think those are really key questions. I mean, we are not unionized. The faculty are not unionized. There is AFSCME Council 28 for some of the workers in Pullman, and we've kind of made contact with them over the last few days, and they have a number of concerns about the ways in which inequality, you know, unequal pay, worker safety, and other concerns about sort of squandering of resources, equipment that isn't being maintained. You know, they have their own set of concerns, but I think we certainly are finding that we very much have shared concerns. But the faculty and a lot of the staff are not unionized. And we did initially, when we got wind of these proposals, we immediately contacted our faculty senators. And so there was debate on the floor of the faculty senate, but there was not going to be another faculty senate meeting until after the break. And I think we felt deep sense of urgency, given the fact that, you know, some people's jobs are being cut entirely and cut sooner rather than later. And we felt like we had to act really rapidly. And after we did this kind of digging around in the salaries and realized, you know, I don't think any of us realized the extent of the problem. We've been hearing about administrative bloat, but to actually encounter just how many people are getting this kind of enormous administrative pay in excess of the governor's pay, there's no way you can tell me that it's harder to govern a unit in a public university than it is to govern an entire state.
Yeah, I mean, this is often the explanation that one hears for high administrative salaries, that this is sort of the going rate. If you want the best people, you just have to pay these kinds of salaries because that's what they can get at another school. And if you're not going to pay them that, they'll go elsewhere and they'll get their $250,000 or $350,000 or whatever it is that they're getting. Have you heard those kinds of responses? Have you heard from people pushing back against this alternate proposal? Have you heard from the president? I don't know if he's had time to respond.
Yeah, I don't think we have heard directly from the president. We may at some point soon, I have no doubt. But I mean, we've heard some reporters have kind of asked that question. Wow, 30% cuts to people making over $300,000. That's pretty harsh, isn't it? I mean, they're kind of playing devil's advocate, I think, as much as anything. And, you know, these same administrators have recommended a nearly 20% cut for teaching assistants who are barely breaking $20,000 a year. I mean, that 20% cut has substantially more impact on that TA than our proposed 30% cuts. And as we indicate, nobody loses their job, nobody has to go on Medicaid, nobody has to eat at food banks. And the reality is we do have students now who are living in their cars. We have students who now, many universities, probably most universities in the country, actually have food banks on campus. And, you know, I think about these salaries and I think they don't presumably consider it a hardship to cut the entire theater program when you're making enough to fly to New York City at will to go to a Broadway show and then take in dinner at Tavern on the Green. It may not be a big deal to you to imagine eliminating the only existing theater program in that Pullman region, but it's a big deal for the students who are going to lose that as part of their educational experience.
So what are next steps? What would you like to see if there are students or former students or employees or former employees at Washington State University? We can put up a link to the petition so that they can sign on to that at KBOO.
Yeah, and the petition is open to residents of the state of Washington. So we're doing a broader shout out. We are speaking out very vocally. We are using, you know, some of us are tenured, some of us are not tenured. But I will say that tenure gives some of us a degree of safety in advocating very publicly for the public good and, you know, in sort of going up against administrators who have, you know, tremendous power over some of the circumstances of our work lives. But that's one of the reasons that, you know, tenure is important. And that's one of the ways that we are using it to defend this public institution and the rights of students to be able to get a public education without carrying 30 years of debt on their backs.
Yeah, I mean, the average student in the U.S. finishes college with something close to $30,000 in debt, which, of course, tends to grow because the interest gets compounded. It seems like this is no longer a system that is providing free public higher education. education in the way that...
Or even affordable.
Or right. even...
Yeah. I mean, the impact of this debt on students' subsequent lives, like life decisions. I mean, we were seeing recently, I think there was a story of people in some states getting their driver's license revoked for their failure to keep up with their student loans. And that question about, you know, we need these kind of wildly competitive corporate salaries, right? We need corporate style salaries in public institutions. And, you know, I think my answer to that is we have to act collectively across the country to shut down those avenues within public institutions, right? We don't want people hopping from institution to institution looking for the highest pay, right? If we want to keep these costs down, then we have to organize nationwide. And I will say that we're pretty early on in this campaign, but this was a campaign that was pretty easy to put together. I mean, as a student or as a state resident, you could access these databases and crunch these numbers yourself.
And so has this sort of thing been proposed at other universities? I mean, I imagine it's harder at private universities where there may not be so much information available in the public record, but have schools elsewhere or state college systems elsewhere tried to do things like this?
You know, I've heard broadly several years ago about students in the UC system coming up with their own alternative budgets. And that's, you know, that's the most that I know of. You know, this was sort of like, we regard this as an emergency situation and we had to come up with a kind of creative response to it. And we are going to be, you know, we've approached the WSU American Association for University Professors, the AAUP, to ask them to endorse this proposal, which we're fairly hopeful that they will do. And, you know, we're hoping that as students come back, more of them will get wind of this proposal and find other ways of organizing to either, you know, back this or to push back against these budget cuts. Because the reality is we cannot afford these corporate-sized salaries at a public institution. We simply can't. And we know that we can't because we're continually going through these layers of budget crises. And, you know, this isn't our first time to the dance or the ball, right? We've seen waves of this over long periods of time. And I think this time it was like, no, we know that this isn't necessary. And, you know, we know that the model is to cut instruction to the bone. We know that the model is to make cuts that materially diminish students' experience in the classroom, that create higher instructional loads for professors, that cut tenured positions and keep everyone in the university in a state, everybody but administrators, in a state of precarity, right? Where people are afraid to speak out. We're afraid to advocate for the public good.
And this is, you know, as we were saying earlier, this is not something that's unique to WSU, to Washington State University. It's been happening around the country, around the globe. And it's not something that sort of happened spontaneously either. I mean, it's worth noting that a number of sort of right-wing think tanks have been developing these approaches nationally and globally since at least the 1970s when Lewis Powell's memo to the Chambers of Commerce of the U.S. pointed to the dangers of leftists on campus and advised a sort of counter campaign in the interests of promoting free enterprise and the free enterprise system so that there wouldn't be pesky regulations on environmental damage and consumer protection things, right? Which really cost a lot of money. And so things like the American Enterprise Institute and the Heritage Foundation have been developing these ideas and promoting them through the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, the World Bank. I mean, this is a kind of global trend. One of the comments in the OECD's 1987 report said that because only radical groups, some of them housed in universities, were delusional enough to embrace the image of a society in which economic considerations take second place to quality of life, that others beyond the university would have to step in because obviously economic considerations are much more important than quality of life considerations, according to the OECD. And the same report recommended that university administration would need to dismantle strong forms of collegial controls that made universities less manageable and replace them with strong corporate-style administrators. And this is what's happened as administrators have less and less come from the faculty for a sort of temporary go-round in the administration before going back to teaching and research and being a faculty member, and increasingly from this specialized layer of administrators who will go around from university to university getting the highest possible salary for their services, such
as
they are.
And expanding administrative layers while they're there, right? I mean, it's all sort of based on, you know, this kind of fetishization of what administrators do. And so they expand those administrative layers wherever they go. And I just want to go back to that quote, right, from the OECD about, you know, economic considerations and quality of life, and simply say that, yes, economic considerations are quite primary in the ways that we're thinking about this alternative cut, because what we're saying is we cannot afford these corporate level salaries at a public institution, and that paring that back is integral to the quality of life of our students, and they are the primary stakeholders. They should be, you know, the primary stakeholders whose right to an education is our primary concern. And I think that particularly people with tenure, people with measure of job security, we need to now more than ever be speaking out publicly in defense of the students' right to get a public education without walking away with a 30-year mortgage on their souls that's going to impact their lives, their marital decisions, their childbearing decisions. We have to fight for their right to a quality education.
And on that unquestionably true note, this has been Fran Michelle talking with Desiree Heligers for the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO.